Thanks, Dan. Okay, so as Dan mentioned, I'm Amy Baldoster from the National Institute for Reproductive Health, and I want to talk to you briefly today about our Urban Initiative for Reproductive Health, and then hand it over to Maria Luisa, who's going to give us sort of a practical example of how our model of working at the local level with local elected officials and advocates to improve reproductive health actually rolled out in Mexico in their great victory in decriminalizing abortion, as well as other amazing victories that she's going to talk about. So I'll just start with the introduction and then pass it over to her. We have no financial relationships to disclose. If any of you would like to have a financial relationship with us, I guess we would consider it. So just a quick word about where I come from. The National Institute for Reproductive Health is an innovation institute. We work with state and local organizations across the country on reproductive health issues. And we're better known probably as the C3 Foundation arm of NARAL Pro-Choice New York. So long history of organizing there to help local groups win battles in what I think we all know in the U.S. and in other countries is a sometimes hostile environment to reproductive rights. And to that point, we don't work only on abortion, although we're going to talk a little bit about abortion services today, work with our partners also on contraception and healthy pregnancies, environmental justice, reproductive justice, and there's more information on our website. I also brought with me brochures about our initiative that I have up front if you're interested. Some of the programs we do at the National Institute, besides our urban initiative, include our Winning Message Action Program, which is fighting abortion bans in this election season, our Low-Income Access Program, and the director of that project's here, among some others you see on the screen. So this model of the Urban Initiative of bringing together local elected officials and advocates really comes from our experience here in the U.S. where, you know, national elected officials are often putting politics before science, and where we see even at the state level a reflection of those kind of ideological debates getting in the way of making greater access and resources available for women in reproductive health. Even in New York State, the state we work in, you know, I work with a lot of advocates who are in the so-called red states, and they say, oh, how can you complain about what's going on in New York? You guys have everything. You know, our New York State Senate is a majority anti-choice and stymies a lot of our actions in the assembly to pass sort of proactive reproductive health legislation. So we started working on a model in New York City, which is when the feds and the state are sort of not helping you, can we look at local elected leaders, at mayors, at city council members, at county commissioners, aldermen and women, and their resources as a way to increase access and improve reproductive health outcomes in urban areas? So this is a multi-year initiative that we're doing in cities across the country. As I mentioned, we had some support with local level support, some luck with local level support in New York City. Just a couple of the initiatives that we had funding and support for from local elected officials are listed here. They've supported our peer-based sexuality program. It's basically peer educators. A large emergency contraception awareness campaign, about $3 million for education and EC distribution in New York City. Abortion provider training, a commitment in our through our Health and Hospitals Corporation to do abortion training for people in their residency programs. New York City branded condoms. I forgot to bring them with me. I don't know if you've seen them. They're great with the Subway logos on them. And the nation's largest nurse family partnership program, which works to improve healthy birth outcomes. So as you're going to hear during my presentation, New York City is not the only city with those kind of successes, but just so you know where we're coming from. Also, why are we focusing on an urban population? I should say that as the National Institute, we also work to improve rural women's access, for example, to emergency contraception. But on this particular project, we started looking at the health of women in urban areas. And there's some statistics here to kind of back up why that's important. If any of you are doing work in urban communities, you probably also know this to be true, that over 100 million women in the U.S. today are living in sort of urban areas. Many of them are young in their reproductive years. Women who live in those metropolitan centers have higher rates of low birth weight, infant mortality, less access to prenatal care. I see a lot of heads nodding around the room. You know it's true. And that low-income women, I think we heard a little bit about that from Nayeli, bear the brunt of many of those reproductive health disparities, including the incidences of unintended pregnancies, STIs, et cetera. Oops. Just went the wrong way. And I also want to talk about the need, since you're going to hear the story from Mexico, to work on with urban populations worldwide. You know, I came from a background of working on reproductive health for the Rockefeller Foundation in Bangkok, which is quite a city, with Family Care International in Santo Domingo and Women's Edge in Tegucigalpa. I mean, any of you who have been in urban areas see what we know, that half of the world's population now is living in urban areas, and by 2030, this is data from UNFPA, they project that as much as 80% of the world's urban populations will be in developing countries. Poor women in those cities, much like what we heard in the U.S., less likely to utilize contraception, higher fertility rates. A lot of them are young people, disproportionate numbers of young people who are heads of households, already having children, and much less likely to have access to consistent and good reproductive health care. High abortion rates, and something I want to draw your attention to at the end of the slide, that most urban growth today is actually due to natural increase, which means more births than deaths, than it is to migration. And I think we see a lot of cities trying to do these kind of anti-migration policies. They think it's all people coming from, you know, rural areas to the cities looking for work. That's happening. But you know, we need to encourage our city governments also to dedicate some important resources to reproductive health care and prevention of unintended pregnancies in those areas. I want to give a shout out to Mexico City. I found a stat that 76% of the population in Mexico City lives in urban areas. So the opportunity, you know, we found that there can be political support in what some of our friends call blue cities and red states. So you may be working in a state like Texas, which has the highest unintended teen pregnancy rate in the country, and obviously abstinence-only education. But there are cities like Austin, for example, where they've passed very progressive legislation on the local level, basically requiring any companies they do business with as a city, so kind of putting their wallet where their mouth is, to have contraceptive equity. That means contraceptive coverage for birth control, basically, and EC in their policies, or else they're not going to get a city contract. So that's an example of being in maybe not a progressive state, but having some local options to make progress. Some cities have huge budgets, as you can see there, and an opportunity to really do a lot of work at the local level. Even in places where you don't have a huge budget, you can do cost-neutral programming like an EC signage law, for example. More accountability of local elected leaders, certainly a higher likelihood that we could organize our activists to go in and see their city council member, their mayor, than getting them to go up to Albany, for example, to talk to state elected officials. And just a couple examples I wanted to throw out. You know, in Cleveland, they managed to institute a citywide K through 12 comprehensive sex education program in their city. In Pittsburgh, they passed buffer zone legislation to protect their clinics from protesters, and they're about to do the same in Philadelphia. I mentioned Austin. In Washtenaw County, Michigan, a state, Michigan is a Hyde state, they've managed to do local county abortion services funding, which is great. And in Houston, an integrated AIDS prevention program. Here's a list of some of the cities that are participating with us. Want to go on to talking more about Mexico City, so I'm going to move through this kind of quickly. One way we've been mobilizing these urban folks to get working on this reproductive health issue is by holding summits. We did a kickoff summit in May, more than 35 cities, 11 public health commissioners, 200 folks. Delegations from cities across the country coming together to say, you know what, this is what we did in our city. It doesn't necessarily take a lot of money, and these are the good outcomes we had. And we were really honored to have Maria Luisa there, as well as the equivalent Secretary of Health from Mexico City, to talk about what they were able to do at the city level in terms of decriminalizing abortion. So moving forward, we're also making grants. So making about $250,000 worth of grants to local cities and counties to do kind of proactive reproductive health policies. We're doing regional conferences. Keep an eye out. In 2009, I put the Urban Initiative website up there. If you're from any of these places, we're going to be having regional summits, one held in Atlanta for the Southeast, in Chicago for the Midwest, in Los Angeles for the kind of West and Northwest, and in Denver for the kind of Mid and Southwest. I also want to invite you, if you're interested in learning more about city-based work to address disparities, we're having a webinar. You can come up and grab my card, and I'll send you some information. November 18th webinar with elected officials from cities across the country who have disparities commissions, looking at both ethnic and racial disparities and disparities in maternal mortality, things like that. And with that, I want to turn it over to Maria Luisa, who's going to give you just an amazing example of working at the local level to make change in a city like Mexico City.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for giving this introduction to talk about Mexico City and our experience. As Don already made the presentation, HIDE is a nonprofit organization. We're basically based in Mexico City, and we partner with local NGOs nationally with leaders who are working on sexual and reproductive health and rights. So I'm going to give you an example. What's this? Some of the strategies that we've worked on, considering that Mexico at large is a very predominantly Catholic environment, it has advanced in terms of how society is moving forward, and there is a process of secularism, as we see how the Catholic Church is very strong, but still society is practicing reproductive and sexual rights according to their own personal needs and interests and beliefs. So some of the multiple strategies to favor public policies when we have a very restricted environment is, of course, a state-of-the-art information on reproductive and sexual rights. What does that mean for society? What does that mean for public officers? When we were at the summit organized by the Urban Initiatives, we brought the Ministry of Health to testify how he got involved in all of this movement towards decriminalizing abortion. And one of the things that he appreciated was to have information on reproductive rights and why it was important for them. The other thing is to educate the public. Public policies educate the public at large, improves access to justice in Mexico. Abortion is decriminalized at large. We have contraception, emergency contraception in our family planning norm, but still we know that we have very strong barriers, especially for low-income women. It also improves health services, and that's why we're working to improve health services, to build a constituency to demand for these public services. We all know in any country of the world that if we don't have society demanding for these services, public officers, legislators will not care about our issues. And we also foster for collaboration between public agencies, public officers, and NGOs to improve access to public health services. And here I think it's important to state that we also have talked about a theory of change. We think that all of these variables are necessary to make any change in any political society, whether it's restrictive or not. So the importance of public policies in reproductive and sexual health services and protecting the purpose of public policies. We know that laws are insufficient if they are not supported by public policies. We had a recent decriminalization of abortion, and if we don't have the necessary policies to reflect what the existing laws are, it will be very hard to implement the services. So we see public policies as catalyzers of existing laws, and also public policies reflect the progress or the disadvantages in society. Public policies have also served us as a backup for the implementation of services. We are now trying to implement the services in public hospitals. It's working very well, and I'll talk about that a little bit later after decriminalizing abortion. But we all know that laws are not sufficient and that we can make a lot of progress if we work towards public policies, if we identify who within the system can be our allies and are really sensible towards these issues. And, of course, it can also work as a barrier to provide services. As I was mentioning, emergency contraception is in our family planning norm. It's over the counter. You don't need a recipe from the doctor. And still, we find several ministers of health in other states of the country not providing free contraception, whether it's emergency contraception, the use of condoms, or any other method. There is still a very low, how do you call it? Offering, provision of contraception methods within and throughout the country, and where it's working bestly is in Mexico City. So collaborating and partnering with public entities and NGOs, that has been one of the things that we've worked on for several years, and that's why we'll explain why and how it was possible to decriminalize abortion in Mexico City, considering it is very conservative. Sensitizing public hospitals with public officials, training on sexual and reproductive health and rights with several NGOs, not only, of course, CIDE, but with Population Council, with IPAS Mexico, with Catholics for the Right to Decide, giving an alternative voice on why the Catholic hierarchy is especially against reproductive and sexual rights, and, of course, creating public support to move forward. We also provide technical assistance for procedural guidelines within the health system, but also with legislators who are trying to improve public policies or to avoid setbacks when it comes to abortion rights. Ensuring a gender perspective and rights approach in health services is also keen to be able to have a favorable public health system, and improving the quality and delivery of services. Dealing with our opponents that we know are here, there, and everywhere, we've tried and chose not to avoid burnout and aggressive confrontation, really doing that and choosing our battles and knowing where we want to have a dialogue and where we don't want to have that dialogue in public radio communications or wherever that can take place. Showing wisdom, good sense, and prudence, which makes us really, really different from them. Tolerance and patience that we know that every activist we always have to have when choosing these controversial battles. Confronting them with arguments, reasonability, and empirical evidence-based information has proven to be very successful to reach the undecided people who are liberal but sometimes don't understand what is around reproductive and sexual health and rights. So placing controversial issues in the public agenda, we started by placing the termination of pregnancy due to rape campaign. That was very important because in general, according to polls, people will oppose less on abortion due to rape. And we also had to carry out a paradigmatic litigation when health services are denied in general, but we also did it on a Paulina case that was a service denied for a 13-year-old girl that was raped and denied her legal right for an abortion service. And so we held a public campaign so that people would know about the issue. And it was also an entry point to talk about emergency contraception, about reproductive rights, about abortion rights at large. And public campaigns, of course, encourage women to demand for the rights they are entitled to. So what are the critical fundamental legal arguments that we chose? We always choose to work on our own legal system. the Mexican law and constitution has very strong foundations so that we can work there before going to any international courts or using treaties, which are very useful, but trying to work internally. So we work on our Article 4th of the Mexican Constitution that says every person has the right to decide freely with information and responsibly on the number and spacing of their children. Article 130, Mexico is a late state, so the importance of and during the discussion on decriminalizing abortion, stating the lay state and having that separate the church from the state was very key. Emphasizing women's fundamental rights to health, life, autonomy, privacy, free from discrimination and freedom, and balancing rights, which is very important at this point. We know no right is absolute, and while life is protected in the Mexican Constitution, at the same time, fundamental rights must be guaranteed by the state, expanding options and creating conditions. So this is one example of the public campaigns. It says, Violada, raped, you have no chimes, no time to lose. And inside the brochure are all the steps a woman should have to carry out. Unfortunately, a woman that has been raped and becomes pregnant, she has to go to the Attorney General's office and request for a legal abortion. And she has to complete that step so that she can go to any public hospital for a legal termination. Then another public strategy held by several NGOs was taking back the meaning of life. Vida is to have options to decide freely, because we're always talking about pro-life, taking the term life, and what about us? What about people who work for reproductive rights? What is our meaning about life? So vida is, life is to be able to choose safe and free, safe and legal abortion services. And then the meaning of life is to be able to have a happy family, a traditional family, we put, because we are in a very traditional setting. But it talks about a story of a woman that became pregnant and then had to have an abortion, and she was like in a very difficult situation, but then she was able to have her own family, to decide and to be happy and to choose her children. And so what took us to have the law that we now have in Mexico City, which is a huge accomplishment. It really is, considering how difficult it is to place abortion rights in a very restrictive environment. So we had it was adequate to our social and political context. Moderate, it's only on demand up to 12 weeks. It has rigorous and social arguments that were within the initiative or the bill. We put at the center women's health, life, autonomy, privacy, and freedom. It is now guaranteed in its access to free public city services in 14 public hospitals, one clinic out of 25 public services, which is really, really important. Prevention of unwanted pregnancies is also included in the law. And they prioritized, and then together we worked with this on sexual and reproductive health services, access to birth control methods, including emergency contraception, the promotion of sexuality education, Your Future with Freedom, which is a very new book that was launched by the Mexico City government and asked several NGOs, HIRE, Catholics for the Right to Decide in Mexico City, to jointly work on this book, which is very, very liberal and includes every issue you can talk about for youth in high schools. And very quickly, the multiple elements of success. A social and political crisis that we have to mention. We are living at large in our country this condition. A dispute among conservatives and liberals. The right and the left are really pushing hard, and that was favorable to our cause. Mexico City's liberal society with a clear process of secularism. Mexico City is not like any other state of the country. we must say that it is very liberal, diverse public speakers in favor of decriminalizing abortion beyond the feminist movement, which was also a very important strategy, having and human rights NGOs that never before had spoken out, or intellectuals or artists or academics that were inside the closet, we say, and now freely and openly spoke about abortion rights. A left-wing majority in the House of Assembly, a pro-choice movement empowered due to the belligerence of the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, and anti-choice fundamental organizations that were morally discredited, that had no strong author, moral authority to discuss on abortion rights after the pedophilia scandal or the misuse of public funds that we found by pro-life organizations, and also strong foundations to decriminalize abortion, an international tendency on human rights and liberalizing abortion. We strongly feel that the feminist movement, the position of the feminist movement, is really the winner of all of this, because we know that without that that thought, that theory of feminism, we wouldn't have moved forward, and that we are very clear that these international tendencies have also been, and what we were able to do in Mexico City was because we had what others had succeeded before, and we thank them for all their hard work, we sincerely do. And we also had NGOs well organized and prepared to seize the opportunity. And these were some campaigns that we did right before, after the decriminalization of abortion. What to do, what were the steps, where to go with addresses, a map to help them guide where to go. Then stating who had an abortion. It says pregnant, you have 12 weeks to, not even to terminate your pregnancy. It only says you have 12 weeks to decide and to be free from a clandestine, it's not anymore clandestine. So we don't even use the word abortion. And that was done after we did focal groups. And this was what seemed more coherent and not necessary to, you know, stress on the word abortion. So young women, this is not a married woman, it's a 15-year-old woman, but in Mexico at 15 you have a big party. So young women having abortions, a student having an abortion. So up to now, legal abortion services as of October, and this was exactly October 17, 16 months, 14,760 women had a legal abortion, provided in 14 public hospitals. Mexico City residents, 79.5%. Other states of the country, 20%. 52 single, 40% married. Catholics, the majority, as we can see, I mean, Catholic or not, they have abortions. And minors are only 0.25% up to now. But we know these figures might, you know, start growing, because we have a lot of teen pregnancy in our country. Gestational age to 9 weeks, the use of misoprostol 42% alone, misoprostol with aspiration 40.5%, and misoprostol with GNC 17.3%. And this is all precise information provided by the Ministry of Health of Mexico City, which otherwise we wouldn't have. So this is also very, very important. They provide counseling, giving reconciliation with pregnancy, adoption, and abortion, but they are, in general, public hospitals that are not trying to convince women to not have an abortion or to mislead them with other information. We do have objectors, conscientious objectors, and it's included in the law, but public hospitals cannot be conscientious objectors. So they're, you know, dealing conscientious and committed doctors, both working together, and it seems to be working well, as in any country when you change the law overnight, we still have a long way to go. Contraception is emphasized, and they're mostly taking IUD. They take 80% after counseling any contraception. all adolescents are given materials on reproductive health, and in one of the clinics, it has been registered that only 3% have reconciled with their pregnancy. Well, just finally, the significance of the Supreme Court resolution. I don't know if many of you know that right after the law was passed in Mexico City, two unconstitutional claims were presented to the Supreme Court, the National Supreme Court, and after almost a year and a few months later, the decriminalization was on April 24th, the Supreme Court upheld the law's constitutionality, setting national jurisprudence because of the supermajority of 8 justices out of 11, and voted for the health, life, autonomy, privacy, and freedom. We're still waiting for the sentence, but the deliberation, which was open and public, all of these 8 ministers had these principles for fundamental rights for women. And we're still expecting other challenges. Of course, this is just a starting point. We don't see it as our victory and nothing else to go. We know that in other states of the country, some are trying to move forward, very few, and left-wing parties are trying to do that. But in 2 northern states, which is more conservative than the right side of the country, have just recently, last week, changed the law to protect life from the moment of conception, so that we know we have to work very strongly on the legal arguments that the Supreme Court emphasized and worked on, because that has to be the basis. So we know that even if life is protected from the moment of conception, that doesn't mean that women don't have the right to have a legal abortion, and that we can still move forward, which will take a lot of time. And this is another campaign throughout the country. It says the Supreme Court is in favor of life. And this one also is saying, for the defense of life and the rights of women, to decriminalize abortion does not obligate or incite any woman to practice an abortion. It protects the life and health of women. It respects their capacity to decide and value their life plan. It defends your personal, no, it says, defend your personal beliefs. Do not allow anyone to decide over your own life, no? And the Supreme Court, the interruption of pregnancy is the law in our state when? So that is, you know, moving forward for other states of the country to do similar as in Mexico. So as we say, relentless during battle, generous in victory, implacables en la batalla, generosas en la victoria, because we always have to show that we're not like our fundamentalists that are working hard against us. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Any questions for Anissa or for Amy?
Yes, I have a question for the speaker. I didn't quite get a sense of how much time it took you to achieve all that.
Oh, several years. And we would say this, as I was saying, the feminist movement started early in the 70s. So they started working, and then in the early 90s, we started getting more like professional in terms of creating NGOs on reproductive and sexual health. After Cairo and Beijing, it made a difference to start working. And in the year 2000, we got together in a so-called alliance, a national alliance for the right to decide. And it includes 5 organizations. It's IPAS Mexico, Population Council Mexico, Catholics for the Right to Decide in Mexico, Gender and Equity, which is another NGO, and HIDE. So we worked together, invited by some donors to work and target to decriminalize abortion. And so we dedicated all our efforts to do so. And from 1999 to 2000 and beyond, we worked relentlessly and on framing the discussion, taking it out of the as being a taboo issue. And of course, this was accompanied by working with the media as well, working with allies in other networks of youth that were working parallelly. So these strategies took a long time. This cannot be explained overnight. And we also had a very gradual strategy, like an incremental strategy. So we worked with the legal indications that were already in place, ensuring and guaranteeing that, okay, those legal indications you have to guarantee. And then we also worked to uniform the law throughout the country because Mexico City had the most progressive law and to decriminalize abortion. So we had a change in 2000 in Mexico City, 2003, and then in 2007 to decriminalize abortion. So I think that explains pretty much. Yes, thank you for the question, and hola, ¿cómo estás? yes, public services are not working, you know, completely well, and one of our priorities is to follow public services and to see that they are really providing quality services, counseling, to be very close to see that really they are just, you know, mentioning these three options and not trying to convince any woman to go for one option or for another, for example. And because the Ministry of Health has been very supportive from the beginning, like after 2 weeks that the law had passed, they were already working on the procedural guidelines and searching for NGOs to help them incorporate, you know, our own language and seeing that those guidelines would really represent what women need in public services. And we've had monthly meetings with the Ministry of Health, telling them where we find problems, barriers, and mistreatment to women who search for legal abortions that we know occur because they come to our web pages and they ask for information or they call us to our NGOs to see how they can have an abortion on time, because at the beginning they would postpone the time for the woman to have the abortion. So if they were on in the limit of 11 weeks and, you know, days, they knew that they were in a rush. So all of those problems that we saw, we have been trying to work closely with the Ministry of Health. We know that that they have made some progress, because we have more women writing to our web pages or calling us, telling us that they had a very good quality care when approaching public hospitals. But we still know that there are many conscientious objectors, but not only by doctors, but also by nurses, and maybe less by nurses and social workers, but there still are many who are resistant about having this as any other medical procedure within their hospitals. So we know that the public discourse also sometimes can give you or can give us the idea that, like they say, thousands of women, like 15,000 women, have asked for information about legal abortion. And 30%, they say, did not have the abortion or went to abortion services and decided not to have an abortion. But we don't know where they went. Maybe they went to a private clinic, because private hospitals where they have their own private doctor, or they chose to go elsewhere. Right now we have several clinics that we know that will be opening in Mexico City and other parts of the country by Mary Stopes International. And we see that as necessary and important, because we realize that the Ministry of Health does not necessarily have the full capacity to attend those women. And we participated also right after the law had changed, training all 14 public hospitals and trying to sensitize them and telling them about the law and how it had changed and how they were obliged to provide the services. But I mean, it's still a complicated situation that will evolve slowly, we hope. And we're saying that in Mexico City, it's working well. For example, we only have had one death, and that was after 12 weeks, not within the 12-week program of gestation, because the doctor didn't follow the protocol and didn't, you know, verify that she had 16 weeks of pregnancy, and he treated her as, you know, if she were within the first trimester and she had anemia and other problems. So the public system, we have to be very aware that while we are working very closely with them and we appreciate their work, we still have to be very vigilant on how they provide the services. Because we don't know, even in private hospitals, how many women are seeking for abortions, because that's not public. They won't, you know, like openly talk about, okay, we're having these much abortions. Okay, thank you.
I want to thank all the panelists. I think we've just about run out of time, unless anyone had any burning questions for the panel as a whole. Great. I want to thank all of you, and thanks to the audience for this great panel. Thanks.
Reality Check. Have you done any of their webinars before? It's great, but I need to recommend you to get you signed up. They basically do that so that all the antis can't crash our calls. So if you just, it's on November 18th at 12:30, I think. So if you do me a favor, and I can also, you know what, write down your information for me, because it will be great. And then you're on the phone listening to the presentation, and like they send you something to watch on your computer at the same time. Super high tech and really cool. So I'm very happy to sign you up. Hi, nice to meet you. Amy, in New York. Yeah, great. Okay. That's great. We talked to radio stations. We were on Air America, actually, yesterday. We talked about some of our stuff on content. Great. I am bilingual. Yeah. It's all good. That's awesome, Julia. So thank you. I'll send you the info. That's awesome. Great. Oh, that's cool. I appreciate it. Oh, I would love to. We do it all the time, so that's great. Just let me know. Traveling. We're going to be working on
everybody in my organization is working on Senate campaigns for the next, like, when I go home, basically, I'm going to be in the field working on it, but I always have my CrackBerry on me, so you can always, like, send me a message or give me a call, and then, yeah, I'd be very happy to talk to you. Thank you so much. That's cool. Thanks for coming. Hi there. We are going to have a summit in Los Angeles. It'll be next October, so not anytime in the next couple of months. Yeah, so our partners there are like the LA County Commission on like Women's Health and Wellness, Black Women for Wellness, the California Women's Health Imperative, California Family Health Council, all of these groups that are working there. But if you want to give me your, like, if you live in the area and you're interested, why don't you write down your information, write LA Summit, because we definitely, Pasadena, be a place that'd be great to incorporate. Are you a health educator?
Actually, I'm a college professor.
Oh, cool.
I do consultation for sexual productive health.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, it would be great.
Have you heard about Pacific Institute for Women's Health?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, I know, I met somebody else who works there. They might have been at the Urban Initiative Summit. I'm not sure, but yes, I know them. Yes, very well known. Well, that's great. I mean, the regional summits, you know, will give an opportunity to bring, like, cities from all across a region to talk about their particular. We wanted to, you know, the national summit was great, but I feel like each region sort of has maybe some particular, like, you know, in Atlanta, Mississippi, and Florida, they're looking at maybe sometimes different populations and different challenges than the people, like, in the Midwest. So we're going to have a chance, yeah, to have presentations, and maybe you guys would even be one of them, about groups that are working, you know, at the local level, these kind of models of, like, what's being done in communities instead of, well, and probably concurrent with, you know, we don't give up on federal and state advocacy, but kind of, like, what's actually happening in the communities on the ground to address those issues and disparities. And so it would be great to have, you know, to have you participate. So again, it's not until next October, but we'll start, they'll probably start doing invitations, you know, in the spring. So it's great to know that. Right. Yeah, that would be amazing. And then we'll know, we'll have the place confirmed. I think it's either going to be like the Tides Foundation, or a couple of groups have space they might donate to us to use in downtown LA. So even that is, like, still being confirmed right now, because we're just announcing the grants. But I'll make sure that you get on the list for when it happens. So that's cool. Nice to meet you. I'm glad you were here. Thanks. Haley, can you, do you have your whole paper? Like, what, I had no idea this is what you were doing. And part of the grants that we're making to cities, like the 250 grand, right, it's like our funders wanted to know about evaluation. And all of them were kind of like small organizations who it's not their big priority, and they're kind of like, well, it's hard for us to give you deliverables on, you know, advocacy work at the local. So I was watching your thing, and I was like, oh my God, that's what we need. Like, we can pilot test your thing. Holy crap. And actually, one of the groups that we're funding is ACRJ. Like, Dana is one of our grantees. And California, Latinas for Reproductive Justice, is another one of the groups that we fund. We didn't talk about